Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ato Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadrik Shuchi Shrava Satya Rato Drita Vrataha Arukramasya Kila Bandha Muktaye Samadhina Nusmara Tad Vicheshtitam Atto Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadrik Shuchi Shravan Satya Rato Drita Vrataha Arukramasya Kida Bandha Muktaye Samadhina Nusmara Tad Vicheshtitam Ato, therefore, Mahabhaga, highly fortunate, Bhavan, yourself, Amogadrik, the perfect seer, Shuchi, spotless, Shravaha, famous, Satya Rataha, having taken the vow of truthfulness, Dritta Vrataha, fixed in spiritual qualities, Arukramasya, of one who performs supernatural activities, God, Akila, universal, Bandha, bondage, Muktaye, for liberation from, Samadhina, by trance, Anusmara, think repeatedly, and then describe them, Tat Vicheshtitam, various pastimes of the Lord. Translation, oh, Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. Your firm and vow is situated in truthfulness. And thus, you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Report by Srila Prabhupada. People in general have a taste for literatures by instinct. They want to hear and read from the authorities something about the unknown, but their taste is exploited by unfortunate literatures which are full of subject matter for satisfaction of the material senses. Such literatures contain different kinds of mundane poems and philosophical speculations, more or less under the influence of Maya, ending in sense gratification. These literatures, although worthless in the true sense of the term, are variously decorated to attract the attention of less intelligent men. Thus, the attracted living entities are more or less entangled in material bondage without hope of liberation for thousands and thousands of generations. Sri Narada Rishi, being the best amongst the Vaishnavas, is compassionate toward such unfortunate victims of worthless literatures. And he advises Sri Vyasadeva to compose transcendental literature, which is not only attractive, but can also actually bring liberation from all kinds of bondage. Srila Vyasadeva or his representatives are qualified because they are rightly trained to see things in true perspective. Srila Vyasadeva and his representatives are pure in thought due to their spiritual enlightenment, fixed in their vows due to their devotional service, and determined to deliver the fallen souls rotting in material activities. The fallen souls are very eager to receive novel informations every day, and the transcendentalists like Vyasadeva or Narada can supply such eager people in general with unlimited news from the spiritual world. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said that the material world is only a part of the whole creation, and thus this earth is only a fragment of the whole material world. Paragraph. There are thousands and thousands of literary men all over the world, and they have created many, many thousands of literary works for the information of the people in general for thousands and thousands of years. They're waiting for the but. Unfortunately, none of them have brought peace and tranquility on the earth. This is due to a spiritual vacuum in those literatures. Therefore, the Vedic literatures, especially the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, are specifically recommended to suffering humanity to bring about the desired effect of liberation from the pangs of material civilization, which is eating the vital part of the human energy. The Bhagavad Gita is the spoken message of the Lord Himself recorded by Vyasadeva, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental narration of the activities of the same Lord Krishna, which alone can satisfy the hankering desires of the living being for eternal peace and liberation from misery. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, this is like a mission statement, is meant for all living beings all over the universe for total liberation from all kinds of material bondage. Very strong. I'll read that sentence again. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is meant for all living beings all over the universe for total liberation from all kinds of material bondage. Such transcendental narrations of the pastimes of the Lord can be described only by liberated souls like Vyasadeva and his bona fide representatives, who are completely merged in the transcendental living service of the Lord. Only to such devotees do the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest by dint of devotional service. Conversely, no one else can either know or describe the acts of the Lord, even if they speculate on the subject for many, many years. The description of the Bhagavatam, plural, the descriptions of the Bhagavatam are so precise and accurate that whatever has been predicted in this great literature about 5,000 years ago is now exactly happening. Therefore, the vision of the author comprehends past, present, and future. Such liberated persons as Vyasadeva are perfect, not only by the power of vision and wisdom, but also by oral reception and thinking, feeling, and all other sense activities. A liberated person possesses perfect senses, and with perfect senses only can one serve the sense proprietor, Rishikesh, Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. Final sentence. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, that's like the mission statement sentence, is the perfect description of the all-perfect personality of Godhead by the all-perfect personality Sri Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Vedas. End of purport. Very, very powerful statements made by Srila Prabhupada here. Ato maha bhaga bhavan amoga drikshuchi shrava. Satyarato drita vrataha. Arukramas yakila bandha muktaye samadhi na nusmara tad vicheshtitam. O Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness, and thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. The importance of this section of the Bhagavatam we mentioned yesterday. This is the author, Vyas, is writing about the dialogue between Sutta and the sages of Naimisharanya. When the sages have asked Sutta, can you please describe how this wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam appeared? And so he's answering, Sutta is answering that question. In the course of how it appeared, we're hearing what that Srimad Bhagavatam is. Why is it so important to ask the question, how did it appear? So in short, it's the literary manifestation of Krishna in this age of Kali. It's Bhagavatam is Krishna. Krishna is the Bhagavatam. It's narrations about Krishna which are not different than Krishna. And the despondency of Vyas, or the feeling of insufficiency, saying it more gently, is because he had not sufficiently described the glories of the Lord. So that Srimad Bhagavatam is the glorification of the Lord. And what's the effect of it? Several times Prabhupada has stated in the purport, it's a literature meant to bring about the peace and tranquility upon the earth. And in contrast, the other literatures have not been able to do that, although there's thousands and thousands and many thousands. When Srila Prabhupada was still living in India, and he had just translated First Canto Part 1, Prabhupada saw the whole 60 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. He made a poster to advertise those 60 volumes of Bhagavatam with his picture in the middle of the poster, and the heading, the something to the effect of the treatise of ancient India meant to bring about peace, prosperity, and tranquility in the world. The message of peace, tranquility, and prosperity for the entire world. That was what Prabhupada saw the undertaking of translating Srimad Bhagavatam was meant to accomplish. He wasn't thinking small. He was thinking uplifting the world. Prabhupada was unable to think small. He did things, even when he did small things, he did it in such quality, it was big. His interactions with individuals was also big. It was life transforming. But his vision was transform the world. Janata Agha Viplava, two verses prior to this, that creating a revolution. Prabhupada was a revolutionary. Revolution is not a good word, generally. Revolutionaries are like dangerous people. And Prabhupada recognized that he would be perceived as a dangerous person. by those who had vested interest in status quo, or the agents of Kali would see what Prabhupada was doing. If they understood what he was doing, he'd be, you know, they put him in a, did they treat him like Prahlad Maharaj was treated by Hiranyakashipu? He knew that that was the atmosphere in which he was moving about, but nonetheless he wanted to create that revolution. And basically the revolution was the revolution on the impious lives of people, to make them more than pious, make them transcendentalists. That kind of revolution. So in the verse, I'm going to make a few points. The verse is Narada's two things. It's glorifying the qualities of Vyas, which is extracted, or the abstract of that is the qualification of one to properly glorify the Lord. What's the qualification of one to properly glorify the Lord? Here's the list. Fasten your seatbelt. Completely perfect, for starters. Vision that's completely perfect. Fame that's spotless. Firm in vow, situated in truthfulness. So, Mahabhaga. Greatly fortunate. Amogadrik. Drik indicates seeing, and Amogadrik, perfect seer, flawless. You can see things exactly as they are. And how is it you can see things exactly as they are? Suchi Shrava. You've taken this vow of truthfulness. And Satya Rato. You fixed in truthfulness. Excuse me, Suchi Shrava, spotless, famous for his spotlessness, vow of truthfulness, Dridhavrata. Often Prabhupada would translate that as fixed or firm determination. Isham tantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvanva mohanir mukta bhajante mam dridhavrata. Bhajante mam dridhavrata. Fixed in determination to serve Krishna only. And when one does like that, how Prabhupada has translated, is fixed in spiritual qualities. By fixed in determination to serve Krishna only, Krishna decorates one with spiritual qualities. One becomes firmly fixed in spiritual qualities, cannot deviate from spiritual qualities, even if provoked. It's not circumstance created, and it's not circumstance destroyed. Can't be provoked by circumstance. Can't be created by circumstance. It's a conviction of heart that this is who I am. This is my mission of life. To be situated in only serving Krishna's interest. So, one who has that qualification, then back to the first part. Amogadrik, he's a perfect seer. Say it the other way. When we have self-interest, it colors what we see. We see according to our interest. And we don't see Krishna's interest. We see according to our interest. And one who doesn't have independent interest but has only Krishna's interest, they can see things as they are. I was thinking about this just this morning. Some example of seeing according to, well, it's just this common experience. We see intentions in other people according to our own contamination of intentions. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described that the fault-finding tendency is nothing but disclosing how that fault-finder has his own heart honeycombed with the very same fault that he's finding in others. The term is called projection. It's like the modern term. Because, take it the other way, someone who is free from any kind of self-interest, they just see what's there. They're not finding fault with another person. They're not judging another person or finding fault with another person. They're seeing, here's a spirit soul and there's the modes of nature and there's Krishna. And there's this configuration. However, if the internal potency was brought to bear on the situation, it would be different. So how to bring the internal potency into that situation? There's no fault-finding involved at all. Fault-finding is, I'm not interested in serving the person or serving Krishna. I'm interested in seeing the world according to my vision. And my vision is colored according to my own contaminations of heart. Anyway, Vyas was free from that. And Narada is empowering him just by speaking this way. That this conversation reminds me of Jambavan describing the glories of Hanuman when they were trying to decide which of the Vanaras could make the leap to Lanka. And one said, I can go these many miles, Ryojanas, and I can go that many. But none of them was enough. But then Jambavan began thinking, wait a minute, Hanuman. Hanuman, in describing Hanuman's glories, you wanted to capture the sun and you were... Hanuman, you can do it. And that kind of... When there's a Hanuman-like person who is genuinely humble and the qualification of that person is described in the mood of service, not like, hey, finally someone's recognized me, I can do all these things. That's not Hanuman. That's not the mood of a humble soul. But like Vyas, Vyas has this qualification. And Hanuman has qualification. And each of us, in service to Krishna, has some qualification. And recognizing the service potential of another, service capacity of another, and recognizing it and empowering it, it gives blessings to that person to do that service. We shouldn't just be flatterers, thinking I'll flatter them, they'll flatter me, and we'll have a nice, happy time together. But trying to serve Krishna, recognizing some propensity to serve Krishna in another person. That's what Narada is doing with Vyas. And it's also describing what the qualification of seeing Krishna's pastimes, and based upon seeing Krishna's pastimes, describing them for the benefit of others. I'll read just that section again from the purport. It's very nice. Vyasadeva or his representatives, it's not said that in the verse, but Prabhupada is adding it in the purport, to glorify Vyas is to glorify the representatives of Vyas. They're qualified because they're rightly trained to see things in true perspective. Srila Vyasadeva and his representatives are pure in thought due to their spiritual enlightenment. They're fixed in their vows due to their devotional service. Again, the qualification of Vyas to narrate Srimad Bhagavatam or describe it is that they're completely merged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. They know nothing but devotional service to the Lord. They're not interested in anything else. They don't do anything else. Their life is simply service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no separate interest. There's no competing interest. Only to such devotees do the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest by dint of devotional service. So that's the qualification. So, another point I wanted to jumps out of the verse is what he tells him to do is not write the book, but he's telling him to write the book. He's telling him, you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. So his mission was to write, but he doesn't just say, go and write. What does he say? You have this capacity, use it. Fix your mind completely upon the personality of Godhead, because from the seat of consciousness comes activities. You're a literary person, you're going to write. So fix your consciousness in the proper way, and your writing will be the proper writing. Let's go back. Before he was compiling all the Vedas, what was his interest? His interest was people in general are in a big trouble. Kali Yuga is coming. I need to prepare something for them so that Kali Yuga will not afflict them so much. They have strong affinity for matter. Let me show them how their affinity for matter can be gradually, ever so gradually, elevated to the modes of nature, and they can fulfill their material desires. That way, their situation will be better. But Narada is saying, you should fix your mind first upon the personality of Godhead in complete absorption. Then write such literature that just glorifies the personality of Godhead. Then all of that suffering condition can be mitigated completely. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is meant for all living beings all over the universe, for total liberation from all kinds of material bondage. To do something like that, mind has to be fixed upon the personality of Godhead. Now, let's suppose that we're not literary persons. There may be some of us who are literary persons, and there's their job description. But supposing we're not literary persons, we have some other propensity of life. So what's the assignment? Fix the mind completely upon the personality of Godhead. From that seat of consciousness, our activities, our propensities will flow, and they'll be uplifting and beneficial for others as well as ourselves. Because serve we must, because constitutionally we're servants. Service that's not reposed upon the personality of Godhead will come out anyway according to the modes of nature. And so we'll do something according to the modes of nature. So we can just tweak it a little bit by, you know, doing something religious instead of something abominable according to the modes of nature. Regulate our tendencies that are degrading. Better fix our mind upon the personality of Godhead in these direct processes. This is Vyas in his process of meditation. Samadhina. We were yesterday evening covering the yoga ladder. So I was surprised. They were very interested in the Ashtanga, the eight stages of the Ashtanga yoga. What's the difference between Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi? We had some discussion. So Samadhi. Samadhina. He's instructing him in trance. Not like practice, but in trance. Samadhina. Anusmara. Very important word. Anusmara. In natural sequence, because you're a literary person, when you fix your mind in trance, then in natural sequence you'll glorify that which you've fixed your mind upon. And later he's going to explicitly say that. But here he's implicitly saying that. Fix your mind in trance, samadhina, anusmara. Because when you're writing, you'll also be remembering. Anusmara. Following this one comes that way of thinking. By practice of sadhana, nicely performed each morning, then the activities of the day in turn will be anusmara. They'll be following that consciousness that's following the quality of our sadhana. And we'll spiritualize our activities of the day based upon performance of prescribed duty and thinking of Krishna. Always, ideally, always, in all circumstances, not created by circumstance, but regardless of circumstance, simply based upon the awakened state of the consciousness of the soul. That's what sadhana is for. I'll share this particular japa retreat expression. One devotee, we were in Sharanagati in British Columbia. There's a farm community there. And one of the devotees that was taking part in the japa retreat, it was at the sharing part at the end. And he said, before I joined the temple in Vancouver, I was chanting japa. I learned about chanting japa from the books and from the devotees. So I was in my home chanting japa. And I thought, this is so nice. I bet it would be really nice to chant japa in the association of devotees. Just like we chanted a little bit of japa at the program last night. And it's nice to chant in the association of devotees. So he said, I thought, let me join the temple so I can chant in association with devotees. And it was wonderful. Then he described, you know, the phase of getting distracted. How he described it was, we were engaged in, during the day, in book distribution. So that was very nice because I could also think of Krishna in terms of the message of the books while distributing the books and then return back to the temple and have kirtan with the devotees in the temple. But fruitive tendency being what it is, through the course of book distribution, I started becoming attached to the results of how many books and score and that kind of thing. And so some days I'd have a bad day because when I was attached to the results, I wasn't thinking serving Krishna, I was thinking getting a result. And so when I would have bad days, the next day was chant nice japa so I can overcome that fruitive tendency. Then in course of time, books became mixed with paraphernalia so we could have more Lakshmi, so we could have more books. And then it just became paraphernalia because we wanted to build a temple. And so chanting became a way of fixing my day. And doing that for so many years, now X number of years later, that's what chanting has become. And in the company of the devotees chanting in this way, now I remember that chanting that I used to do long ago. The chanting because I enjoy chanting. Like connecting with Krishna in the association of devotees. That's what we should be doing. Not just like fixing your day so you got a 45 degree tilt and you're going at 60 miles an hour and so you can meet the challenges of the day. That's not the purpose of chanting. The purpose of chanting is to connect us with Krishna, like here with Vyas, as he's being instructed by Narada. Samadhina, anusmara, tadvicheshtatam, various pastimes of the Lord will appear in the mind if we've performed our sadhana properly, and then we can think of Krishna because there's some affinity for or even attachment for Krishna even while we're doing our worldly things, because those worldly things are also expressions of some form of service to Krishna. Some ability is given by Krishna, we're using it in service to Krishna. absent that consciousness, our activities are going to be what Vyas was describing as the problem. People have too much affinity for matter. That if the light of Krishna consciousness grows dimmer, what's left? This ocean of matter all around us and a desire to be happy, so we want to find happiness through involving ourselves with matter. Somehow. It just doesn't seem to quite work, that's all. So we try to do it this way or try to do it that way and mix some other things together and get our friends together and do it collectively and enjoy matter. Somehow enjoy matter. With great determination, try to enjoy matter. We just have to get it, the stroke right, that's all. When the real problem isn't how to enjoy matter properly, it's we forgot Krishna. So, another qualification of Vyas and the followers of Vyas, Prabhupada writes, is that they're determined to deliver fallen souls rotting in material activities. It's not a liberation movement. It's a service movement where Vyas and the followers of Vyas want to serve by the material activities, the souls attached to involvement in matter. It's too painful for them, and seeing them in that condition is too painful. And even as Prabhupada is describing here, the activities of people of the world, as well as the literature describing those activities of the people of the world, it may be cosmetically covered very nicely, put in a nice package, in a nice ribbon, in a bow, and put some perfume so it smells good. But inside, it's rotten. Rot means it stinks. Or as we heard yesterday, it doesn't look good. No shobhate. But you just dress it up so it looks good. Like how someone showed me one of these, how they advertise hamburgers. You know, the little boy, little girl, and animated, and they're going through the field, and all of a sudden, a flower comes out of the ground, and on the top of the flower is a hamburger. And they go and eat the hamburger. And then there's Ronald McDonald, and they're playing with Ronald McDonald. It's all just like La La Land. You know, there's no idea at all of what they're doing. It's just, you know, make it look nice. Put a bow and ribbon on it, little perfume, and it's nice. But it's not nice. Not at all nice. Now going back to the spirit, Prabhupada is recognizing in the purport that people have this. Why that spirit is there is because it's natural for the soul to be attracted to Krishna. But when Krishna disappears, then attraction to some journey or exploration or information of the yet unknown, journey to the center of the earth. And it's just make-believe. It's just fiction. But somebody, you know, people are curious, so they make a book about it, make a movie about it, or etc. With nice literary ornaments and expressive language, and somebody's a good author, so they write Harry Potter books and sell millions and millions of them, make so many volumes, and people buy them and read them, and of all descriptions, because of it's that the literary style is very good, at least apparently. Enough that people, you know, keep buying the books, keep reading the thing. But where is it taking them? I'll make a concluding comment on Harry Potter. I didn't read any of those books, but somebody said that they were curious, you know, that the whole world, not just, you know, Americans or British people, they're being translated into the languages, and what's in those books? Where is it taking you? So in the final volume, it discloses where it's all taking you. And it's scary. I don't know so I may say it wrong, but something like this, that there's this, you know, good and evil struggle, and the evil force that Harry Potter's struggling against is a soul that somehow achieved immortality by the soul splitting. The souls don't split. It's just fundamental in Bhagavad Gita. But the soul splits if you commit some violent murder. And then that's how one of the split souls becomes immortal and then invincible. And that's what Harry Potter was fighting against, one of those split souls that did some... So, hey, I'm this kid that's reading Harry Potter, or somebody that doesn't know any better because they don't know anything. And that's what I'll do. I'll just commit a violent crime and I'll become immortal. It's the natural conclusion. Why not? I'd like immortality. No, this author that's got an audience of millions of people that doesn't know, they're not students of Vyas. They're not qualified to write such literature. Takes people down the merit path and clubs them over the head. If that's in fact what this nice lady wrote about. So, the Bhagavatam is to take people from that innate attraction, that in the default position, if God is absent, into a downward direction, a dark, lost direction, to light. And inner, internal peace, satisfaction, and tranquility, which people are hankering for. So as Narada is instructing Vyas, Prabhupada is taking it that he, as a literary person also, is being instructed to do such a thing, and so he did. He took that Srimad Bhagavatam and made it approachable by people in the English-speaking parts of the world, and in turn had it translated into so many other languages. For what reason? Not to become a renowned literator, but for service to the whole world. And if we approach the Srimad Bhagavatam, receive it and read it in that spirit, we can become like Vyas, or students of Vyas, and Vyas has some very high qualifications. But the qualifications come from approaching the subject matter in the proper way. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes?
Maharaj, I've heard you speak this example of the devotee that was sharing in Shranagati before, as well, a few times. And I'm confused and not really able to apply the message that you're giving, or choosing not to apply the message you're giving. I'm trying to develop faith that sadhana is the number one thing. And even when there's busy times, you know, sadhana must come first. And I tell myself that, I'm inspired, but my husband sharing this, that, you know, to develop faith that even if less things get done, but in good consciousness, that's better than more things getting done in bad consciousness.
Yep.
So, but the driving force behind that is, you know, to fix the day, to do things in proper consciousness. So, Am I doing something wrong?
Now, the message, you're not doing something wrong. The message that I've been conveying is that chanting is more than fixing the day, it's fixing our consciousness. And when our consciousness is fixed, then we're in service to Krishna throughout the day, however the events of the day flow. It's not like, you know, a pan scale, and you just put a bunch of stuff over here so that you can manage to balance all the other stuff over here. That's not what it is. Rather, it's to see the stuff over here in light of service to Krishna. Our means to achieve that is properly perform sadhana. But it's not just to, you know, balance out your day. As in secularism, the spiritual part of our life and the material part of our life, and I've got a nice balance between the spiritual and the material part of my life. This is also meant to be the spiritual part of our life. This should be done in proper consciousness, and this should be done in proper consciousness. Anything else? Yes?
Sometimes in the morning, we do like a sadhana in a body and do sadhanas and fixing our mind in Krishna conscious way. Like perfectly, more 100%. So during those days, I couldn't able to get on or move on the material activities, like go to work, and I'm not feeling like to go to work and do my other activities. I like just to stay at home and want to read more kind of but is it like not good, like I'm not doing the not showing interest in doing other activities, like I'm neglecting the duties kind of.
Yeah, you know, you need to have a discussion with your husband about this one. You want to comment?
I take out the rest of the things. So I just want to maintain a balance. So.
I'm not sure what your message is here. I got her message and I'm ready to respond to it. Maybe I should just do that.
What I was saying that like the material things are duties to be performed.
Yes.
So.
And as you heard the response that I gave over here, this is, they're also intended to be spiritually uplifting. Otherwise, why do them? If we don't see them as spiritually uplifting, they're a way by which they can be spiritually uplifting, then why do them? We should reject them. Is there a way it can be spiritually uplifting? And the answer is yes. If we see that as service to Krishna. Is there a way to see that as service to Krishna? Read, the language is Bhaktisiddhanta's language, but the message is clear. Sri Brahma Samhita, text number 61. All householders should know that purport. The question, it's an answer by the Supreme Lord to Brahma, responding to his question. As with Vyas, he fixed his mind completely upon the personality of Godhead. Having completed that and written his wonderful prayers to the Lord, he then asked the Lord, what about this tendency I have to do some work? In his case, it's create a universe. In our case, it's whatever else it is. It could be doing housework. It could be taking care of your daughter. It could be going to work. It could be whatever it is. You know, the duties of life. How do I dress myself to the duties of life, having now fixed my consciousness nicely upon the personality of Godhead? Will it not deteriorate and dismantle that spiritual attainment? And the answer that the Supreme Lord gives is, when those activities are joined, Bhaktisiddhanta's language is dovetailed. You've heard that term before. I've spoken about it right here in this room, I remember. But when properly dovetailed with the Supreme Lord, then they become as elevating as the direct devotional activities. If the consciousness is right, I'm serving the Lord. Is it service to the Lord or not? If it's not, chuck it, trash it. Is it service to the Lord? The answer is yes. Now, should I or we as a family, I'm speaking your voice now, should I or we as a family be looking to how to diminish our involvement with matter? And the answer is yes, but not in an irresponsible way or abrupt way or radical way or impulsive way. But as our lives spiritually unfold, something like that should definitely be considered within reason. Not because it's going to hold me back from Krishna, but just the part that you spoke about, I have an increased desire to directly hear and chant. That's good. That's good. Join that enthusiasm with your practical activity, and your practical activity will be elevating and purifying also. It's a little bit like, you know, the discussion in Bhagavad Gita with Arjuna. Krishna is telling Arjuna, you don't have the qualification. Arjuna has the qualification. We don't. But Arjuna, you don't have the qualification to stop your duties. As we evolve spiritually, we may come to the stage that one of those things that was in the chart that people didn't pick up on is the stage of absorption in the beginning is enhanced by performance of duties, in the end is diminishing of duties. Of course, like Prabhupada to set example, he didn't stop even when he was on his, you know, last breath. He was translating Srimad Bhagavatam. Whereas Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he went into seclusion and performed chanting of the holy name nonstop for 2.5 years in his bhajan kutir. I mean, he closed the door and didn't come out for 2.5 years. But he was, you know, he wasn't like avoiding material duties. He was absorbed in the holy name. When we have such qualification, those things may reduce. Or they may not. For example, setting purposes and serving others kinds of purposes, as Prabhupada did. So the move the fulcrum is good. Away from, this is, our path is nivritti. Moving away from material involvement. But in a responsible, thoughtful, deliberate, and qualified way. Not, that's material, and this is spiritual, so let me do away with the material. But rather, the direct processes of hearing and chanting, should the desire to increase them, is a good sign. And in course of time, as your lives as grihasthas evolve, moving things in that direction is good. In a thoughtful, deliberate, that's why I said, you know, let's see what your husband has to say about this. In a conscientious way. But say the same thing in a different way. We need not concern ourselves with maintaining a standard of living so that we're maintaining status quo and all the Joneses were keeping up with the Joneses, using an American expression. But our happiness, when the happiness is factually well situated within, things become less important. The culture of happiness is, you know, production and consumption. So, you know what I mean. We're good in that area, so we're supposed to be happy. For one who has spiritual satisfaction, that fades. Still, I must be responsible, because it's not just because I have now dependence, but I need this purification. The reason I have dependence is I have material attraction. I have to gradually move my way through that material attraction to the spiritual side fully, not artificially and abruptly and prematurely, gradually, progressively. And those things will gradually, progressively fade. But in this case, it's more, the challenge now is more seeing the necessity of, seeing the how the duties of life can be devotional service to Krishna also. Not just the direct nine processes, that's devotional service, and the other side is the material.
Maharaj, you were speaking of recognizing in others' propensities and encouraging those to come out. And especially in working with children, there's also encouraging them to grow in responsibility, in responsibly taking on that service, you know, where you've recognized the propensity. And I find myself becoming lazy where, you know, because they have to be encouraged and you have to follow through and you have to encourage them to be responsible. So I'm wondering how to encourage responsibility.
By being responsible. Show by example. And because the caring is there, then it'll come out, because you're showing by, you are, and you're showing by example. And that's more compelling than anything you're going to say or do. Then when you say or do, it's accepted because, or more readily accepted because of the standard that you're setting, the qualities that you carry. So accept the responsibility of being a Sunday school teacher, you know, in the very fundamental sense of what it means to be a teacher. Yadyaracharati shrestas. That's what it means to be a teacher. Set the example. And then gently help those who you're giving care to grow. Yes.
Going back to the topic Sujama has just raised.
Uh-huh.
So if you are doing your duties with a proper consciousness, or if you are trying to do that, but for some reason if your sadhana is affected, because maybe long working hours or regular working hours, so how to understand that?
How to understand that?
Yeah, when your level of sadhana has come down.
Okay.
Maybe like it's a bare minimum, you can say. But when you're performing your duties, you are trying to apply the teachings you're getting and the proper consciousness.
Right.
So is that okay?
Well, what else can you do? I'm trying to understand what your question is. You will, in those circumstances, you will see over a period of time, there's a direct you know, one-to-one correlation between strongly performed sadhana and smooth occupational duties, poorly performed sadhana and unlimited complications and snafus and, whoa, material energy coming from your occupational duties. So, for purposes of self-preservation, do nice sadhana. But there's a higher purpose than self-preservation. That's to satisfy Krishna. To connect in your relationship with Krishna so that, or as a byproduct, it will certainly enhance your connecting nicely with Krishna. But that wasn't your question. Your question was, I wasn't sure what your question was. So you're just describing a circumstance when sadhana is poor, then I'm still trying to apply the teachings, but my battery's weak. I'm not feeling charged. I'm trying, but it's not happening very nicely because I don't have that same strength. So then the realization is I need to, tomorrow and the next forever, I have to have nice sadhana until the next situation comes where I just get overwhelmed with how much work I have to do, and so my sadhana suffers. And then the next day's next periods of time, work also suffers. We all have that experience. Misery loves company.
I mean, three months before my sadhana was good, like I was able to get up early, do some chanting, but three months was miserable. So I was like having, like I'm not able to do sadhana, so that guilt feeling was coming a little bit. So I'm not sure like whether I'm doing it right or...
Best to hit the reset button and go back to good sadhana. Because the bad sadhana perpetuates bad sadhana. Bad sadhana perpetuates ineffectiveness in the workplace, perpetuates bad sadhana. Perpetuates bad performance in the workplace, perpetuates bad sadhana. It's a spiral downward. Hit the reset button. Go back to good sadhana. Where's that reset button? I knew I had it here somewhere. Something else? Yes.
This is regarding that Harry Potter story.
Uh-huh.
Now, in a particular religion, they teach like holy war. And then they are taught to commit violence so that...
That's different.
God loves and then...
That's different.
It's been interpreted that way.
That's different. You know, that's where there's... Under the order of religious principle for the protection of innocent people, that's different. That's altogether... Then it's not in the category of what this Harry Potter book is about. If some diabolical person does some vicious thing, you know, without any consideration of religious principle. That's altogether a different thing. Because there's always strong and there's weak. And how is strong to be used? Just like Ram, how is strength to be used? In a virtuous way. Only, and not otherwise. There's many discussions about that in Ramayana, for example, where, although there's strength, it's never to be used just because, you know, I got provoked. Only under religious principle. And then it's good for the recipient and good for the performer. But it's nothing about, you know, just do an act of wanton violence and you become eternal. Okay, it's getting late, 9:05. Going to end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.